You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Hey, buddies. It's a Monday night, and we're at Hendox, and so you know that means just one thing. It's the Massive Report podcast. It's brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development creates uplifting environments that enrich the community life here in Columbus, Ohio. Their team of passionate design, planning, and construction professionals aren't just dedicated to seeing projects from initial design concept to final completion. They're dedicated to enriching the quality of life here in Columbus. Go to 180propertydevelopment.com. That's 180propertydevelopment.com. If you want to learn more, if you've got any property design or development needs, pretty good plug coming in off the bench. Bart Logan with you. We are on international break here for the Massive Report as well. A lot of guys out. So you have me, myself, Ralph Schudel, and Sam Fahmy on the mic. And guys, you know, we got a little bit to talk about. First of all, welcome. It's good to be here together. It's a Hello. Small group, but Hello. We're good. Hello. Small but mighty.
Yeah, after episode 300, it's everybody went home.
Yeah, everybody just like, yeah, it's a good rule of thumb. Like with The Simpsons, stop tuning in after episode 300. Massive Report, stop showing up. But seriously, guys, please keep listening to us. I know I'm not Brian, but I'm something. Anyway, let's go back. We did have a little bit of action last week. And some U.S. Open Cup action. And crew is something that we haven't seen in a while, getting a win. And a coach, Caleb Porter, who seemed to have made it clear kind of, you know, even in some of his words earlier in the season and in his introduction that, you know, he's going to take this tournament seriously. And you know, as a crew fan right now, realistic one, if I am anything, it's our best chance of getting a trophy this season. So what do you think about the initial performance against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, USL team that if you're the crew, you'd like to see them dispatch with pretty handily, but wasn't quite the case?
Yeah, it was a little closer than one would have imagined, in my opinion. Pittsburgh came out and they played very admirably in the first half. And the cool thing I want to talk about real quick before we get started is there's nothing that beats an Open Cup atmosphere at Moffray Stadium because, you know, it's
5,000 people. That
There are dozens of us. Dozens!
But, I mean, this, I saw it kind of pointed out on social media that, you know, with the small, intimate crowd, no capos at all or anything, there is a the chants take a life of their own. And there is a young gentleman, I think his name was Kyle Morgan. I don't know the goalkeeper's name for Pittsburgh. But everybody was chanting for the Pittsburgh goalkeeper. It got to the point that they just Nordeca was chanting for him, and it was very interesting. But to the action on the pitch, you know, guys, it was kind of a relatively boring game overall. I know, Sam, we talked about it at the end of the first half. You know, Pittsburgh, you think it's a USL championship side that comes in and not one that's performing at a relatively high clip, but they come in and they don't. You know, they don't wow anybody, and for lack of a better term, Crew SC doesn't either. And Crew goes with a strong lineup of Kempen, Awful, Cronali, Saro, Jimenez, Guzman, Artur, Robinho, Santos, Akam, and Mullins, and they can't get a breakthrough until the 55th minute.
It was a nice goal, though, there.
That, I will say, you know, for as much as Pittsburgh was kind of bunkering down and hunkering down, preventing anything to try to get, you know, they weren't going to be beat through the middle of the park, which was very adamant. But, you know, man, they couldn't get a sustained possession going. They had, according to my notes here, Pittsburgh had 31% possession compared to Columbus's possession at 69%.
Which is nice.
Nice. But
you're such a child.
I had to do that. But, you know, like you said, Bart, I think a good game again for Pedro Santos, who was in the middle. Had a really nice, you know, he was flanked by Akam and Robinho, and I think I'm starting to fall in love with Pedro Santos at the 10.
You bring up a good point. I think this is, could this be the revelation that Pedro should have played 10 the whole time?
Not over Frederico Higuain.
Well, no, but now you're like, what is going on here? But yes, definitely not over Frederico Higuain. His assist was fantastic. But you know where he matched Frederico Higuain? Missing a penalty on the south end.
Yes, seriously.
I mean, it takes some talent to ding the upper 90 corner crossbar, and Pedro Santos managed that. That was probably his downside of the game. But otherwise, I think he played a great game. It was an incredibly boring game, though, to the point where I think even the Nordeca was like, whatever, you know.
And yeah, this is not the game you bring somebody to for an advertisement, you know, with the World Cup and Gold Cup hype. You're not going to bring them to a game like this and say, hey, guys, this is what you've been missing out on.
Well, and you look at it, and credit to Pittsburgh, I think, for kind of stifling a little bit of the Crew's attack. 17 shots, yes, but only 3 on target for Columbus. So, and you know, the one of them is that glorious. And then I was disappointed with a couple players where, one in the case of Robinho, which is, this is a, you know, great audition for him, and against the lower level of competition, I really wanted to see Robinho as a dominant player on the pitch for Columbus. I wanted to see him take on a couple guys, beat him, and I wanted to see him finally get a goal here. You thought that this could be a potential, you know, good opportunity for him to have that breakout performance. It wasn't there. And then the big question mark, it was Patrick Mullins. Patrick Mullins getting his first start of the season for Columbus Crew again. Giassi Zardes, he's going to be out for a little bit. But I thought this was a show-me game for Patrick Mullins. You needed to show that you've got the ability. If you can't perform, if you can't create good opportunities, and he did draw the penalty that Pedro Sancha then proceeded to, you know, squander away. But I didn't get enough from Patrick Mullins. And if he's not producing or even creating something here against a Pittsburgh team, I don't see any reason why Josh Williams, actually it's Jerome Williams, which is even better. My middle name's Jerome. More power to him.
Is it Jerome Williams now?
Yeah, Jerome Williams. Yep. Okay. Double Jerome just, Williams.
J-squared Williams.
But I don't see any reason that, you know, Mullins should be starting over J.J. Williams, who's at least got some upside as a young player, and Mullins, who just didn't seem inspired.
Well, the problem that you're going to have, and you're always going to have this, is that J.J. Williams is unproven.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you're going to give the opportunity to the veteran in Mullins until he can figure out what he's doing. Now, I would like to see J.J. Williams for more than 7 minutes on the field, because in those 7 minutes, I don't think they got a corner. Or maybe they did, but yeah, I agree. To a certain degree, I didn't feel like, maybe it's just not his style. I think Patrick Mullins is the kind of player that pounces on a rebound.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw is that we're not even taking shots. Like, several times where there was ample opportunity to take a shot.
Reminder is always the talking to the microphone.
I have talking to the microphone, but I don't know why it's being stupid. But several times where he's talking, you know, he's let's completely that up. Where you'd have a player, and they would have a nice, or what seems like an opportunity for a good shot, and then they try to pass the extra pass, and it's like, shoot the ball. You got a guy that
it
is
reminiscent
that
of a Greg Berhalter team, like last year. We still need to just scare that out of them. Take the shot.
Yeah, exactly. See, I haven't done anything to the mic.
It's the ghost. The ghost we were talking about before the show.
That's right. So, you know, and I really hope that they do more shooting. And to be fair, Porter didn't. These names that played, they're not there because they're backup, but they are literally the best that he has right now.
Oh yeah.
With Zardes, Trapp, and obviously Stefan. Zardes and Trapp being with the national team.
Oh, and
Stefan
all the
also with the national team but being gone. And speaking of injuries, you got Harrison Offel.
Harrison Offel, yeah.
What impact did he have in the first half that you could immediately tell that all of a sudden he's able to create something and create some crosses that weren't there before.
And the entire weight of play was on that right side around Harrison Offel and Pedro Santos. He just that entire first half, it seemed like everything was in the Nordeca corner with those guys, you know, working the ball around. I thought Harrison Offel, I appreciated that he went in there and immediately just started trying to go with the swaggiest, hardest passes to make. He didn't complete a whole lot of them, but I think Harrison at his age, at his experience, he's got the simple passes. It's that touch that he needs to get back. It wasn't quite there yet, obviously, but, you know, given the time away from it, to be expected a little bit, and better to, you know, get burnt against a team like Pittsburgh that you ultimately didn't get burnt against than in MLS competition.
Well, not only that, you also have a situation where while he may be 34 now? 32, 33?
Yeah, close to that, 33,
Harrison,
I think.
He's like 32.
Okay, so he might be 32, but he's still faster than all of our other options on the right field, on the right side of the wing.
Yeah. I mean, let's go back, because you guys talked about a couple good things there, and I want to kind of touch on Rubinho a little bit. You know, I thought Rubinho had a decent game. I thought, you know, he was kind of, I don't want to say hold-up play, because that's not the right way to say it, but he did what he was supposed to do. He was a pest. He's not the poor man's Christian Martinez. He's a vast improvement over Christian Martinez.
Christian Martinez scored a goal, I believe, in a it might have been a Charleston Cup.
Scored a goal in the Open Cup.
Yeah.
It was against Tampa Bay Rowdies.
Correct.
Yeah. But also, Christian Martinez had speed.
But you know, I think Rubinho's very technically sound. I think he needs the right breakthrough. The guy I was really excited to see get the breakthrough is David Akam. Because how many times have we seen Akam score against Carew? Have, you know, the most debilitating condition humanly possible and come back and put a hat trick on, whether it was Chicago, Philadelphia, wherever any other stop he's made in MLS. You know, so it was really nice to see him finally break through. And you could see, I don't know if it's the Ghanaian connection or if it's, you know, something of that nature, but Sam and I actually got to talking to, like, Harrison and Gaston and Hector before the game. And, you know, they were all pretty jazzed up. And one of the things that caught my eye was the banter between Harry and Akam. And I almost wonder if those two don't have some kind of unproven or, you know, unseen chemistry that hasn't really been revealed on the field, since we haven't seen Harry since, ironically, the last Atlanta game. But, you know, it's exciting to see that. And I honestly think in the very minimal shift that J.J. Williams had, I thought he did pretty well. Given the circumstances, I liked his tenacity in the air. A couple good times, he had a good touch on the ball. A little heavy at times, but, you know, like you guys said, I'm not a fan. I got to go with both of you guys. I'm not a fan of Patrick Mullins. I think he's too slow on the ball. I think he slows the attack down for Crew SC. And, you know, I think he's just he's one of those forwards that I'm not really fond of, where if he goes down in the box, I thought the penalty was kind of soft at field level when I was there, but you know, obviously the center official saw something that I didn't see. But
to be fair, I think it's one of those I think it's one of those situations where he just doesn't fit that system, and he would only fit that system if this is a team that takes a lot of shots on goal.
Yeah,
and
he's
a
poacher,
exactly, and create a situation where you can pounce on a rebound. And that's not how this team is playing right now. That's not how this team is playing under Dale Porter. And to a degree, that's not how this team played under Greg Berhalter either. So is he a good commodity to have because he has been a scorer in MLS? Yes. But does he fit the system? Not really.
See, and I agree with you guys on that. And the one thing that I think we all can agree with is this team needs to start thinking about getting at least a shot on goal the second they hit the 18, wherever they're at in the 18-yard box. And have a back post runner on either side, depending on what side they shoot the ball from, to try to hit that rebound in and try to get a tap in. Because I can't tell you how many times that they've been so close. Even if you put it over the bar, just get the goalie worried.
And Pedro, the only one has actually been doing that has been Pedro. The problem is he's been taking the route of skying it, you know. So he needs to kind of dial it down and bring it. But his shots.
Oh, you get excited about that.
His shots have been fairly more dangerous than they ever have been.
That's, I feel like it's sort of like, you know, the Goldilocks. We're going to get in that Goldilocks zone with his shots, because I feel like through that first, you know, 18 months with the team, everything, it just, when he missed, it seemed to be, or it was just hitting it a little soft, wasn't really getting good connection with the ball. Now he's skying it. Now, this guy's, you know, a professional. He knows how to hit the ball, but it just seems like we're going to hopefully find that little middle area, although, again, he's in great form right now. That assist was gorgeous, and it was a great run from Akam. And I'm optimistic there with you too, Ralph, that hopefully that's something that they can start building off of. And Akam, who's, it seems like he's a bit of a streaky scorer, at least in, he scores whenever I see him, so, or against Columbus. So that was the perception for a while, but if they can get them going at least, then I think that that's something good. And again, they're still in this tournament. There's still going to be some more opportunities for them.
Let me ask you guys this, and this is something that I've thought about a little bit. Are we witnessing, or are we in the midst of Pedro Santos kind of having a, if you will, a Jonathan renaissance, where it took a while for things to click for Jonathan? Are we kind of seeing that with Pedro?
I think that's very possible. I'm not even sure if that's really the case, because, you know, he kind of had technical ability. He just couldn't get, you know, put one and one together. But I don't know. Maybe the change in position, and now he has different responsibilities. He's still, like, I think, was it in this last game or the game before where he said that his job was to get fouls around the box?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the best in MLS
yeah,
at it.
And he does, and he gets fouled a lot because he's so tiny and he can be lifted by a pinky. But, I mean, is it a renaissance? I hope it is. But I don't know what you know, it's very dependent on, oh, okay, so if Pipa comes back, then where does Santos go? Back to the wing, and then you lose his ability again.
I don't know if it's more, you know, kind of adjusting to MLS, or I think in you know, love Greg Berhalter, but I think it's more the coaching adjustment and what Greg Berhalter asked of him versus what Caleb Porter is just letting him do, which is kind of play the game that you know, not necessarily have to fulfill these certain duties, as long as you're, you know, out there letting it be a little bit more fluid. That's one of the, you know, one of the things that I believe Caleb Porter talked about early in the season too, just kind of wanting to unleash Pedro. And I think he's been like this even playing at the winger this season. He's been a productive, he's generated more attacks and more opportunities than he did last year. So I'm going to probably, you know, credit it a bit more to Caleb Porter, and not as a dig at Greg Berhalter, but in the same, you know, in the same vein as we're talking about Patrick Mullins not necessarily being a guy that works in this crew system right now. That the system that Greg Berhalter was playing and what he was asking Pedro to do, requiring to do, versus the freedom that he's gotten from Caleb Porter, I think is the difference.
Yeah, and the big thing, you know, if we talk about another midfielder that had success in that position, is if we look to Diego Valeri back in Portland. You know, I talked to Caleb a little bit about this earlier in the season when Portland came into town, and I asked him, I said, you know, what are the differences that you see between Pipa and that you see between Valeri? And he said, he broke it down two simple ways. He said, Valeri acts more like a forward, picking up fouls in and around the box, being a distributor, and he isn't afraid to shoot on goal. Pipa comes back and helps with the build-up and kind of helps get the engine rolling, if you will, from, you know, the back line through the holding midfield and so on. So, you know, I kind of see, you know, a little bit more of a parallel, I guess, between Diego Valeri and with Pedro. And it almost seems like, you know, it's, and again, I hate to say it, but right now with Patrick Mullins again, this offense really isn't going to be successful without a big, massive target forward that can, you know, do well with their back to goal or do well in the air.
Someone like Jerome Williams.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm going to be the biggest J.J. Williams advocate until the day the guy plays more than 15 minutes. Because I think this kid's got potential. He's got a breakthrough, and it's, you know, with certain lineups that we see with international teams out there, I know we're going to probably segue into the international games here shortly, but, you know, there are some teams out there that are playing during this international break that are so good that they are resting players because they can't get everybody on the field because you can only have 11 people on at a time. But
U.S. Women's National Team.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of where I was going. But, you know, the...
It is rare that you get a tournament where every player except for the goalie, every player, like, of the 22 that got selected... or
every field player.
Every field player gets to actually play some minutes in a tournament.
But can we... let's get there. You're beating me to the punch there. But, yeah, Jerome Williams, or JJ, or whatever we're calling him now, until he plays more than 15 minutes, I'm going to be leading the bandwagon, trying to get him more time on the field.
And you have a situation coming up where you actually have another game coming up in 4 days that you've got to prepare for and have players ready for or able to or whatever. So you might see some lineup changes again in this game, even more so from last game.
Do you think we see like a Nico Hansen, Luis Argudo situation on the wings?
That's very possible. I don't know if you see both. Yeah, maybe you do. You know, Connor Maloney played fairly decent for the 20 minutes that he was in there.
I think, too. I mean, you know, I think that's a kid that's going to be getting some more looks, too, especially, you know, now that Harry's back. But, you know, they're obviously not in a rush to try to get him back into the form and hurt him because he obviously played 45 minutes on.
Could we see Kita playing in the defense?
He did well enough in the...
You know, Crinale played pretty well, you know, in this cup.
Which is true. And we didn't even mention, you know, the return of Alex Crinale, who's here back, you know, for the foreseeable future, something else.
And that's what injuries and call-ups will do to your team.
Shameless plug, Pat wrote a nice article about Crinale's return on Massa Report this week.
Make sure you read it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be getting to that and more. Talking U.S. Women's, talking preview as well, some more U.S. Open Cup after the break. This is the Massa Report. Hey, buddies, it's the Massive Report. We're here at Hendox Bart Logan
What was that again, Bart?
Okay, we're going to just... That's me. Don't worry. This is why we can't wait to have Brian Phillips back.
Brian Wilson?
Anyway, yeah.
Brian Jerome Williams?
There we go. We've got it all coming through. Anyway, so back to what we're talking about, which is soccer stuff, specifically American soccer stuff. And the U-20 World Cup, you may not know this, folks. It's news to a lot of people that the U-20 World Cup is going on. It's actually done, folks. Who even knew this? And would you guess it that our winner, the victors this year, Ukraine over South Korea Saturday.
I had him in the office poll.
I know. It's well done, Ralph, with a good call. I personally had my money on Cambodia. But I don't believe they played either. Who even knows? So let's talk about the U-20 World Cup. Here are my thoughts on it. Why? How is this? Why is it that the national teams, the Germanys, the Brazils, you know, your Frances, even USA and stuff aren't just why is it that teams that like this, Ukraine, South Korea, that do not perform well at the World Cup stage are doing it? Because you'd think, you know, just developmentally, your German team's going to have much more better players that are U-20 than South Korea or, you know, Ukraine. So how is it that they are competing at such a high stage, and why doesn't that transfer when you get later into the careers?
I can see the thoughts in Ralph's head. So before he gets to that, I want to say Ukraine is the same team that beat the United States in the first game of the first round of the United States' first game in the U-20s. In a game which I think the U.S. could have actually beaten Ukraine. Okay. So that should tell you something right there.
I have thoughts about this.
I don't know. Do you?
No.
You don't?
I cannot speak intelligently.
So I actually watched most of these games only to follow Abubakar Keita, who is a crew homegrown and a signee. And he... Ow, that really hurts.
Focus.
Sorry, we're watching something else on TV. He started all five games that the U.S. played. Three in the open, in the start, in, you know, in the round-robin round, and the two playoff games. Looked okay, good, bad, indifferent. I think he's got talent. He plays kind of a high-risk, high-reward game, as our good friend and editor Patrick Gouldin had put it.
Which you love to see from a center back.
From a center back, exactly. is there growth to be had? Absolutely. But he is a pretty decent physical specimen that, you know, probably good and has a good chance of being very malleable by this coaching staff. Tall, lanky, a little bit speedy. His feet could be a little bit better, you know. The U.S. as an overall team had some inconsistent, but there were some flashes of brilliance. Timothy Weah is a good player, and he's going to play in Europe for a long time, and that's probably best because it's going to aid his development quite a bit. But in the great scheme of things, it felt that, you know, their best game was probably the comeback against France to win 3-2. But yeah, you got this moments of brilliance, but wasn't anything extended or long term or anything that says, "Wow, this team is going to really blow out other teams when it comes to when they get older and, you know, get into the U-23s and Olympic teams and future World Cups. But then again, you know, people are looking at the current U.S. men's national team and kind of saying the same thing.
Is it, you know, and again, this is me pleading, because as Ralph mentioned as well, I also did not follow the U.S. Men's World Cup. I've got Foot Mob, and so I would get, like, notifications from time to time about Abubakar Keita, and I'm like, that was awesome. Great, he's starting. Didn't really follow the rest of it. So is it just that, you know, with these other, more prominent national teams at the senior level, is it just that those U-20 players, if they're good enough, they're playing at the senior level, and so they're not playing in these tournaments? Or, you know, are we going to be looking at a Ukraine team that in, you know, 2022 or 2026 is going to be a contender?
You know, I don't know. In tournaments past, you've had teams like, African teams that would win this tournament. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, this is great. You know, African football is on the rise. A lot of those kids, some play internationally that have been discovered by European teams, but a lot of them still play locally. And you're like, these are going to be great. And these when those kids are old enough to be on World Cup squads, they're going to really tear it up. But then they get to that age of World Cup squads and they don't tear it up. And they kind of fall off the face of the planet. And you're like, what happened? So there's a plethora of things. Some of it is developmental. You know, if they get picked up by European development academies or South American development academies. But you've had some South American teams that have really tore it up in the youth tournaments that have not developed into good senior men's national team players at all. And you're like, where is the disconnect? So there's some issues in development there somewhere, but those tournaments have grown to be not an indicator of future rewards or successes for national teams. I mean, we're looking at the team opposing Ukraine was South Korea, not Germany, not France, not the Netherlands, not any of those. It was South Korea.
Like half the kids on that team probably weren't born or were born the year that they hosted the World Cup.
Probably, like, yes. Yeah. I mean.
I'm just doing a little back of the napkin math on that one, but.
Yeah.
Well,
so
I have a weird thought, though. I know the controversy that's surrounding the Gold Cup right now is the same thing that we had going on for the U-20 World Cup. I did pay a little bit of attention to it, but they're talking about Josh Sargent, which is the redhead kid that tore it up in the U-20s, played really well with Trap, played well. I think they played on the Olympic team together. Trap, Weah.
I believe so, yes.
Trap, Weah, Sargent, all those guys.
Yeah.
Big redhead.
Trap was one of the accepted player on the Olympic team.
So the big thing was, do you cap tie Josh Sargent? I think he's got – I'm not sure if he's got parents of another descent, but they're talking about Tab Ramos and Berhalter go back and forth between – getting players playing for the United States where they have options to play elsewhere, where you have like the Air Force babies, you know, the Fabian Johnsons, the Jermaine Jones, stuff like that.
I believe his dad is German.
I think so.
And his mom is American, or vice versa. It's one of those things.
But that's one of the big controversies that we have right now, is that he was left off the U-20 World Cup roster, I think. And he's not on the Gold Cup roster, so it's like he's in this purgatory right now where people are wondering, well, he's not cap tied to a nation right now, so he technically could float back to Germany if he wanted to. But, you know, to see what you guys are talking about, I don't know about U-20s, because I think, you know, maybe having my experience in the college game, a lot of these players are, their bodies are still developing, they're still growing into their bodies, and, you know, even though that they are, you know, grown adults by, you know, legal standards and all that stuff, they're still very much growing up. And, you know, a player that's good at 19 may not be the same player when they turn into 22, 23. Injuries happen. People, you know, you tear ACLs, ankles get progressively more weaker with terrible pitches that you're playing
on. Anybody?
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, I think, you know, Ukraine and South Korea might be really good right now, or at least by U-20 standards, but, you know, maybe they're just not, you know, they don't have the type of training that the Germanys, that the Englands have, all this money that people are starting to pour into federations. And, you know, maybe that's why they drop off. I don't know. I like I told you guys at the start of the segment, I don't know enough to speak intelligently about it, but I can't imagine that those federations have enough money where they're able to sustain that growth. You know, they may be good right now, but this might be the peak of how they're going to perform.
Well, you know, Speaking of the peak, I don't know if we're seeing it yet, but man, the U.S. women look like there's something formidable right now. Two games and already clinched their ticket, I believe, to the second round or the knockout stages with a 3-0 win over Chile. But of course, the news that's got everyone, all the takes, everyone in tizzy, the 13-0 shellacking of Thailand in the first game of the group stage. And it's, you know, hey, it's a way to come back to you know, get some people excited about the World Cup. And this is, you know, U.S., you know, defending World Cup champion. And I'll get my take out here with it first. A lot of people have been, you know, criticizing, oh, look, they ran up the score, or even worse, they celebrated. Women are paid a fraction of what the men are paid, and they scored more goals in that game than the U.S. team has scored since like 1998 or something, or 96, maybe back to 2002. So you should, from just a, they are also suing U.S. soccer right now. So they should run up the score and do everything that they want to do to prove their point that they should be paid much. I frankly think they should be paid more than the men, but at least as much, because and if you are like, if you are just so like caught up on this, and the fact that they scored 30, Thailand scored 11 goals against Cambodia to get in. Okay, they ran up the score too. I don't know. I didn't watch that game either, so they may not have celebrated from it. But who cares? Who really cares? If you're, I think it is a nice thing. It shows how far we've gotten, that we've come. That they just, this is what we're going to complain about. That they're scoring, you know, and celebrating after scoring the 11th and 12th goals.
Well, you know, the big thing that I had kind of pointed out to me, it was by a player that was formerly of the Mexican Federation, tweeted to me that the big thing is that we're talking about it, right? And that, you know, the women's game is pretty under the radar. If you're not looking for it, it's very difficult to find it in mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the United States scored 13 goals, had a record-breaking performance, Mal Pugh, Lavelle, Muiz, Horan, they all scored their first goals in World Cup competition. And that's a tremendous achievement to be celebrated.
And Alex Morgan probably scored more than a standard U.S. appearance in the World Cup just by yourself.
Well, and here's the thing, and I think this will resonate with Crew fans, and this was a point that I've kind of told to people that are casual observers of the game. I said, you know, it's a lot like professional wrestling, right? You're trying to build, you know, you've got this battle between the good guy and the bad guy. Let's say, you know, U.S. soccer is the bad guy right now because, like you said, they're embroiled in a pretty, pretty big lawsuit talking about equal pay and everything like that. And let's give a shout out to Visa, because I think Visa is the company that is matching. I think they're doing something with payment where they're trying to level the playing field a little bit for this World Cup as one of the title sponsors for the women's national team. But back to my point, though, is this is a lot like professional wrestling, right? This wasn't really a thing that, you know, it's no personal grudge against Thailand, but they were sending a message. And they were saying, this is what we're doing, this is what we're capable of. And, oh, by the way, I don't think Greg Berhalter and the men's team, Jurgen Klinsmann, Bruce Arena, insert whatever coach name here, has scored 13 goals before in any competition. You know, so they have every right to celebrate. They're badasses. They know they're badasses. And, you know, it's really good, and they need to take it while they can get it, because I think they're going to get some pretty stiff competition, at least in the quarterfinals, if they get out of the knockout round. I think the projections today had them facing Spain, which they played Spain and beat them 1-0 in a friendly late last year, I believe. But the first big test comes against France, and that crowd, you know, I know American Outlaws are out there, everybody's traveling in full force, but there's something to be said for home field advantage in this World Cup.
That's absolutely true. I was watching, actually, the game yesterday against Chile. And to be fair, yesterday's score could have been significantly heavier if it wasn't for the absolutely amazing performance by Chile's goalie. And she was just
Claudia Endler, for those at home.
Claudia Endler. She was absolutely, like, I would, if it was possible, I'd sign her for the Crew. because I think she would probably be fantastic.
Let's do it.
I mean, some of the saves. I mean, Carly Lloyd got robbed three times, and then she missed a penalty. But
cat leg reflexes, man. I mean, everything that she, you know, everything that was going her way, she just they couldn't get it past her. And I think, you know, I saw one of the funnier takes on Twitter. Somebody said that she saved that penalty with her mind.
Right, she had the force fields up.
Yeah, she psyched force out Carly field. Lloyd to you know, push the ball a little bit far wide there, but she was tremendous.
But the U.S. was pressing. They were pressing hard. They were playing very smart, like very smart football. And that was really good to see. It's really hard. I've watched a little bit of as much as I could. I watched the I think it was Cameroon and the Netherlands.
Yeah, that Saturday morning
on Saturday morning, and just. You know, look, women's soccer in Africa is far, far, you know, behind everybody else. And while Cameroon kind of put up a little bit of a fight, they're just not at the skill level that the European women's teams are. But I'm looking at some of these other teams and I'm like, I don't see a team that can really... I can see a team that can give the U.S. a harder time, but I can't really see a team that can... That I can say that team can beat the U.S. straight up, you know, and even more so the fact that Jill Ellis was able to play all of her field players in the first two games. Literally every single player, every single field player she has was able to get some time on the field in those first two games, which I don't think I've ever seen that happen in a tournament.
Did she silence the crit? I know I think Abby Wambach might have spoken out a little bit about her, and I know
about Jill Ellis or about the score?
Jill Ellis. And I know there have been a handful of people that have been pretty critical of Jill Ellis coming into this. It might not have been Abby.
It was Hope Solo.
Hope Solo, my bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
Solo, opinionated? What?
Yeah, exactly. So do you think she has silenced those critics through these first two games, or are we just going to say, look, the USA, you need to be playing for the medals or the cup, rather?
The thing is, I've spoken to Jill Ellis numerous times, and she's actually probably, outside of Greg, I think one of my favorite coaches to talk to, and because you know exactly where you stand with her. And, you know, she's very upfront about how she wants to play a game, and she came into this World Cup with the mindset that she wanted to get everybody action. It doesn't matter if you were number one on the roster in field players, if you're the Alex Morgan, or you're down all the way at the bottom with Emily Sonnet being the last player that played yesterday to get subbed in. She wants to get everybody action for this game, and you know, I think one of the beneficiaries of her system is Kristen Press. Kristen Press is a player that started under Tom Sormani, who was the coach before Jill Ellis, was a young forward, kind of moved, you know, she had a ton of potential and was like a rudderless ship, for a lack of a better term. But with Jill Ellis' coaching, with her thriving in the Red Stars organization, and now with the Utah Royals, she's capable of playing probably three or four different attacking positions. I think her game against Chile last night was probably the best she's ever looked for the women's national team.
She got
team.
Robbed a few times, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was like her and Emler had a personal grudge going on one-on-one. It was like, you know, it's anything you could do, I can do better. You know, and they were going at it. But, you know, I think Jill Ellis does take a lot of stick, but I think that comes with being the best. You know, you get Tiger Woods, if you think about it, in his heyday. You know, everybody was, you know, kind of like, oh, he's, you know, he's the man, he can do no wrong. And now that he's proving that he's human, he gets some stick, and that happens. But I think, you know, that's what you get with...
I don't okay. know if I'm going to go okay, that
maybe it was,
far.
Okay, maybe it was... maybe it was a, maybe it was a little...
He deserves all the stick that he gets.
Well, yeah. I get that. But, you know... You're going to have... Okay, let's go Golden State. Let's go with a little bit of a more kind of contemporary thing here with Toronto beating Golden State. But, you know, Golden State always gets this target on their back because they're the super team. They're, you know, they've got all these great players. They've got a bench full of starters on any other team in the NBA. It's basically the same thing like we talked about.
So you're saying that everyone's going to get hurt and we're going to lose? No. Ralph, this is not the analysis we're looking for.
No. But I mean, you know, you can draw some parallels between the two because technically the United States have players that can start on any other World Cup squad.
True.
You know, it's basically 22 of the best players that you can really cycle out. And I think that's why Jill Ellis is getting so much field, you know, so much rotation because she wants to work different players together. The youngest, for goodness sakes, Tierna Davidson, who was the first overall draft pick for the Red Stars this year, was starting at left back. She started here in Columbus for the She Believes Cup in the middle of the snow, rain, ice, sleet, hail, everything that came out.
There was some sun.
There was some sun for a little bit there. It was sunny in 70 during the England-France game there. But, Tanner Davidson was a center back, got injured at Stanford, and now she's playing outside back for the United States. Applies her trade traditionally to the center back position for Chicago. But, you know, I think she's trying to rotate all these players together to see what they can do if, God forbid, an Alex Morgan, a Rose Lavelle, a Tobin Heath, or somebody of that sort gets injured.
I mean, it does say something when you got Crystal Dunn starting at fullback. You got to find a way to get her on the field if it's got to be at left back.
And
okay.
She's a damn good fullback.
But okay, so
hold on. Speaking of, are we moving on from women's?
No. Go on.
Oh, okay. No, I was just going to say that Shannon Box will be honored at Crew Stadium in the Kansas City game.
I'm very excited
for
about
the
that.
Women in soccer.
I'm gonna wear my Red Stars polo that day.
So,
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah, come out to that game.
Yeah,
and bring supplies. Bring school supplies to get a free ticket.
Bring
a backpack full of school supplies mm-hmm. to Moffray Stadium for a free ticket to the Crew versus Kansas City game.
Absolutely.
Let's recycle back real quick, if I could, gentlemen. Then we'll move on. You know, if we talk about this United States game, they kick off Thursday at 3. Against Sweden. This is the first time that the two sides have met since the 2016 Olympics. And that was the Hope Solo game that she said that they played. Sweden, that is, played like cowards. And that's the game that got her thrown under the proverbial bus, and she was never seen from or heard from again in a U.S. soccer uniform. Mm-hmm. So this game, I'm going to tell you guys out there, and you know, you guys obviously here listening to me babble, is... Alyssa Nair hasn't been tested yet, the United States goalkeeper. I think she sees some tests this game coming up against Sweden, and I think we find out what she's made of. If she answers the test and passes the test against Sweden, I think we get a little bit more of a clearer picture on what we're looking at later on in the tournament when the Englands, the Frances, and the Germanys start kind of looking up there. Because if you look at the bracket right now, the United States is going to have a really, really tough road to get to the final because they're going to be going through France. They're going to be going through Spain. I think England is on that side of the bracket as well. If you go over to the opposite side of the bracket for the 16, Germany's got a clear sail. I think they play Italy first off. But Germany, for all intents and purposes, should be in the final. They could run up against Japan in the semifinal, if I'm not mistaken. But Germany should be that team there, and that could be a bloodbath on July 7th. When those teams meet together in Lyon later on this summer.
Absolutely. Still a lot to get. So, quick picks. U.S. win, we're winning this thing, though, right? Yeah?
I have to see how Nair does first.
What's the over-under?
I don't know what the over-under is.
No. I mean, what's the highest you think they get?
For the year or for the tournament?
For the tournament.
I could... The U.S.?
Yes. Semi-final, quarter-final,
I could see them getting into the final.
Okay.
I could see them getting into the final, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but they could lose to England, or they could beat Germany. Because I think England right now has such a great squad. A lot of their players play for Barcelona, the feminine Barcelona
female
squad,
Barcelona team.
Female Barcelona team. They have the captain of the Manchester United women's team on their squad, Alex Greenwood. She's wonderful. And then Karen Bardsley, who is the Manchester City goalkeeper for the women's squad. So England's pumping a ton of money in their federation right now, and they're trying to mimic the United States Federation by, you know, trying to do it and trying to beat them. So I think England is probably the biggest contender to this World Cup, but I also think that they could have a great matchup against Germany. But they fall no lower than third.
America's going to win, in my personal opinion. What do you think, Sam?
I agree with Ralph. I don't think they fall lower than third. It would, just considering how well I've seen them play, I will be really surprised if they do fall lower than third. I think they have a good chance, just regardless of how it draws out.
It will be interesting. There's another tournament coming up this year, Gold Cup. USA not looking too inspiring in the men's side under Greg Berhalter heading into this tournament. A couple of friendlies in the last few weeks and not any performances to hang your hat on. Certainly not that 3-0 shellacking at the hands of Venezuela.
In Fortress Cincinnati, Fortress Nippert.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm sure next game though they're just gonna make that fortress into something to be proud of. Oh boy. Yeah, and then they're gonna play another. Man, we can't play any World Cups games there, guys. That's in 2026. Ugh, I don't like it. Anyway, though,
you can't play at Nippert anyway because it's artificial grass.
But at Paul Brown.
Yes. Yeah. They'd have to still bring grass in because I believe Paul Brown is not natural grass either.
Regardless, what are we thinking so far of the national team under Greg and heading into this Gold Cup? We'll keep it short, though, because we are coming up against a break. Our sponsors, we've got to get to the sponsors.
True. I honestly don't know. Until now, you have not seen a first team lineup by Greg, whether it's for injuries or whether it's for players that join the national that can play it or anything like that. So what you see in the first game against who's it against?
Well,
yeah, see, yeah, we don't
exactly.
Even,
this is.
Yeah.
I'm all on the Women's World Cup as the last 10 minutes. This, you know.
Yeah. So anyway, could you see the first team lineup officially in that first game? Maybe. Maybe not. It's going to be an easy game because that's how you know those tournaments are scheduled, but. I don't know. There's a system. We know the system because we've seen it for the last 5 years or 4 years. But how easily can those players adapt to that system when they're not playing it day in and day out in practice year round like crew players are?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and it's been bad too because like Zardes hasn't looked great, Trapp hasn't looked great,
Stefan hasn't looked great.
And those are, you know, our guys. It's tough. I could see them moving on from the first round, but maybe not even in first place.
Ooh, woof.
You know, I mean, I'm going to look up their group now while you dispense the thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. And it is true because we are sponsored. And this segment, we're going to let this segment be sponsored by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCG Bag on Twitter and Facebook at GCG Bag. That's GCGBAG 96. The number's 9 and 6. And check out it's still on there because it's been a while, but the Drunken Cruiser postgame show from that wonderful draw against New York. And as always, the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of Mass Report. It's a thing.
So the United States is in Group D, which is Guyana, Panama, Guyana, Panama, and Trinidad and Tobago. Now, granted,
Alex Crenali and Will Trapp are playing in the Gold Cup.
Oh yeah, whatever. That was a bad joke by Ralph right there. So the U.S. plays
lean into it now.
The U.S. plays its first game against Guyana, which that you know, if they don't bury them, maybe not 13-0, but that's now going to be like
I think
that's going to be the ongoing joke.
Yeah,
now,
they got
your first.
Does USA score 13 goals in this entire tournament?
I'm going to go with the under on that, Alex.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely take the under on that.
And then you have Panama and you have Trinidad and Tobago, and these are two teams that have, at certain times, caused trouble to the U.S.
Oh.
So.
What? No.
No.
Right? So, what does Berhalter do in the face of these three teams? And then, you know, you advance to the next group, and your possibilities are. Let's see here. If they play the Group C, any of the Group C teams, it's El Salvador, Honduras, Jamaica, and Curaçao. Is it Curaçao?
I don't know.
English is my second language.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got Honduras, which gave you trouble in the World Cup qualifiers. Mm-hmm. You have Jamaica, which just beat you 1-0 and really pressed you hard the entire game. So, I don't know. I don't see. I have a hard time seeing. Like I don't think they get in the top four.
It's not a problem. Do we think that Greg Berhalter? You know, we were talking earlier about Greg Berhalter and his approach, or maybe ambivalence toward the U.S. Open Cup. Do you think, you know, maybe more minor tournaments like this, especially, you know, with the Gold Cup, that it's one of those that's maybe not a priority for him as the way it used to be when it just used to be, you know, U.S. or Mexico in this?
I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can do that. It's different with national teams. And you want, I mean... He won his like first three games, right? Mm-hmm. His first three friendlies, and then they lost the last two, and they've been booing them. You know, it's like there's a deep, deep wound from not making the World Cup last year, and unfortunately, he doesn't have that luxury of being like, "Oh, I'm new, take it easy on me," or not that he would do that, but in order to put his system, he doesn't have that luxury of being able to take his time into developing this team. The fans want results. The Federation want results, and they want results now. And this is a tournament that you are playing at home in front of your home crowd. So you have to get a result. You have to get a good result. You know, at minimum quarterfinals.
And if they do not make it that far, remember, it's Cincinnati's fault.
Well, of course. It's always Cincinnati's fault, but yes. If they don't make it that far, it's going to be... I don't think Greg's going to get let go or anything.
No.
But
this tournament's so minuscule on the grand scheme of things. This tournament doesn't mean anything.
It might not mean anything to you or to Bart or to us sitting here or, you know, anything like that. But to a lot of U.S. fans out there, they want to see a different result. And that's not what they're getting right now. And I think there's a lot of U.S. fans that are incredibly antsy about this tournament, and they're taking it as a major barometer to whether Greg is a good coach or not. And for us who have suffered with it, that's a joke. For us who have suffered with it in the last 5 years, we realize that Greg teams have their days, and when they're good, they are good. But
oh, yeah,
they have times that they can't put two and two together.
Well, yeah, they're darn near unbeatable, but I can't think of any U.S. fan, maybe with the exception of the American Outlaws, that are like, yeah, we need the Gold Cup. We need it this year. Yeah, this is our year. Like, I could care less about the Gold Cup. Tell me about Confederations Cup. Tell me about World Cup, Copa America, if we get some weird invite to it through some... weird, you know.
Yeah, why is Qatar playing in Copa America? I thought that was weird.
I think they extend like the invite to somebody. Like,
I know
because
how much,
money,
how,
Sam.
How, I was going to say, how much money did Qatar play or pay to get their butts whooped in Copa America?
But you know, it's just like I could honestly like, if you think about Gold Cup squads, I think what in 2015 Michael Parkhurst was on the Gold Cup squad. Stu Holden was on the Gold Cup squad. I mean, these weren't players that were at the top of their game and that we were seeing in. You know, World Cup action necessarily. So, I mean, I wouldn't put too much stock in it if the U.S. doesn't get out of the quarterfinal. And there's a great article on The Athletic today about... I know I said The Athletic. Everybody would freak out. There's a good article about why people shouldn't give up on Zach Steffen yet either. And it's, you know, obviously we know how good he is.
Oh, yeah.
The rest of the nation doesn't because crew are on national television once a year. So, you know.
And the only other time his name is during the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think one team that knows how good Zach Steffen is the team we're going to be talking about after this break. That's the Atlanta United. And we'll hear about it more in segment three. Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report. Bart Logan, Ralph Shadell, and Sam Fahmy with you. We just finished talking about a little USA. Now, back to the U.S. Open Cup. Your Columbus Crew taking on Atlanta United. Tonight, if you're listening to it, because you're probably going to be listening to this tomorrow, Tuesday. We're recording on a Monday. So
we're warming you up for the U.S. Open Cup game.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got, you know, you look at this. We were talking about a little bit earlier that Greg Berhalter had kind of discounted, didn't prioritize, whatever you want to call it, U.S. Open Cup. Suddenly, Caleb Porter comes in, he's elevating it a little bit more. We get the win against Pittsburgh, but now you're facing an Atlanta team that, albeit they've got some significant names, you know, Joseph Martinez out of the picture playing in, or you know, out for the international break, but still a team that, you know, do we think, guys, that we're going to see some starters? Ralph, you watched that game against Charleston, a pretty exciting game that went into extra time. But, you know, this is an Atlanta team that still has a pretty good arsenal to pick from. And it, from the crew, you know, you've got some good players to pick from, too. But between the injuries and the guys you've got out on international leave, it's still some pretty slim pickings.
Yeah, I mean, but I was real impressed with Atlanta. But credit to Charleston, too. I befriended some of the Battery front office during our time down in Charleston, down in February for the Charleston Challenge Cup. They run a high-class organization. They actually had to move the team or move the game to a closed-door facility due to poor field conditions down at MUSC Bank Stadium down in Charleston. It's fun to say. You gotta say it like molasses in your mouth. Anyway, nobody. Tough crowd tonight. Anyway, yeah, but for the game, to be honest with you, Charleston got on the board early, and that was actually what kind of piqued my interest in the game. I think they got on the board in the 35th minute or so. So I was like, oh, man, I got to catch this. I got to see what's going on here. And they held on to it. I think Atlanta equalized in the 74th or 75th minute of that game with an assist from none other than Justin Merman, who came on as a double substitution at halftime. Him and Vasquez were I can't think of his name. I think it's Brian Vasquez or it's Daniel Vasquez. He wears can't think of his jersey number either off the top of my head. Oh, well. But they were linking up really well. They got the game into extra time. And then him and Miram linked up again with about 10 minutes to go in the game. I think it was about in the 110th minute or so in extra time. They linked up on a beautiful pass. And then Atlanta ices the game with about 1 minute left in stoppage time to get the 3-1 victory. But, yeah, I mean, it's a fun game. I think it's going to be a good one on Tuesday. I hope a lot of people come on out. I think I saw something for tickets like $5 that Nordic's offering, something like that. So, I mean, it's really on you if you can get to the game. I mean, that's cheaper than a lunch at Subway or something like that. But, yeah, should be a fun one Tuesday. I'm just hoping I've been talking to Sam all week. I still have PTSD from the monsoon game that we had earlier in the season, and I hope the rain that I'm looking at on North High Street right now hopefully subsides a little bit later on tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I saw the forecast not looking great. Yeah, for those of you interested, again, Nordeck, $5 tickets available. Yeah, just find the Nordeck on Twitter. It's at NORDECKE or head to Nordeck.com, and you'll find a pretty easy link there to get those tickets. Only $5, not too bad. That's U.S. Open games, and I've heard some stuff that's there's a little bit of chicanery that goes on between MLS and U.S. Open Cup and a little bit of undermining. So we're probably not going to see a whole lot of people here, but, you know, you brought up earlier, Ralph, that it makes for a unique environment, unique experience.
I would tell you guys don't bring kids to Nordic because it's a little bit more unstructured than it typically is during the course of a match, but you'll hear a lot of colorful chants. But yeah, that's for a different podcast. But we talk
or be a good parent, bring your kids, tell them to never, ever, ever repeat anything they hear on the door deck,
or have, you know, earmuffs or something. But yeah, it's a good deal there. And while you're at the Nordic Facebook page, wish Robbie Rovic a happy birthday. I think we missed that.
Happy birthday, Robbie!
Speaking of happy birthdays, I believe yesterday was Duncan Otten's birthday.
I think it was.
Friend of the show.
Last episode, didn't we have his kid or son, too? Or no,
that was two episodes. That was like 10 episodes ago. Ralph can't do math. So happy birthday, Duncan. We love you, man.
Absolutely.
And tripods, dude.
All right. Pick times. What are we thinking? U.S. Open Cup. Do Crew advance? By the way, if Crew advance, they could potentially face FC Cincy in the quarterfinals, I believe.
That game will actually probably be sold out wherever it's at.
Yes.
Well,
I would think so.
Crew got to take care of business against Atlanta this Tuesday in Moffray Stadium. Do they do it, Ralph?
Why'd you put me on the spot first?
I've got two choices.
It was a 50-50 shot either way. I'm going to say no. Because
boo. The whole crowd's here booing you, Ralph. Boo.
Boo.
All two of you and all seven of you that will listen to this. But anyway, I don't think so. I saw a lot of what I liked with Atlanta. They played really good team soccer. And God forbid they shot when they got inside the 18. What a foreign concept that is. But, yeah, I just think, you know, Atlanta's too good. Petey Martinez looked very good in the game. I just don't think they can overcome, especially without Zach Steffen. I'm still nervous. John Kempen didn't see a lot of action against Pittsburgh. We don't really know what Kempen's made of. So I don't feel great about it, and I think Atlanta beats us on Tuesday.
Sam, what you got?
Hold on. I'm looking here at something real quick just to be like... I guess Atlanta...
Abby is on Tinder.
...is no longer the worst team in the league anymore. But on the other hand, I don't know. I think this team and Caleb Porter feels that this is their only chance at any sort of hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So he throws his best lineup out there and tries to salvage the season by trying to win the Open Cup.
Is that Patrick Mullins or Jerome Williams up top?
I'm going to say it's probably going to be Patrick Mullins, but maybe Jerome Williams in like the 65th if they're still tied. If they're still tied or down, maybe he goes with both. You know, you never know if he goes with a straight 4-4-2 instead of that, mm-hmm. you know, 5-4-3-2-1 type of thing. But I know that's not right. But anyway, I'm going to say Columbus. I'm going to say it's a repeat of the last meeting between those two teams. Hopefully, sans the typhoon. And it's going to be 1-0 Columbus Crew.
All right. That's what I like to hear. I'm going to go 2-1 Crew. But, yeah, your good guys winning. And Jerome Williams getting the goal. I'm going to – I agree. I don't think he's going to start. But I think he picks one up. And I think Guzman. David Guzman, he's got one coming. It's happening. He's going to Olympico. We're going to see it this time.
What?
Yeah, have you not watched him take corners yet? Come on. Boy. Anyway, this has been the Massive Report, and it's brought to you by 180 Property Development. If you have a design need or anything else like that, head to 180propertydevelopment.com, unless you guys want to preview KC too.
Well, I mean, we already took care of our guys at 180 Property Development. We can talk about KC real quick.
Yeah.
That's going to rain.
It's going to rain.
I don't know.
So, did a little research, right?
Oh, boy.
This is weird.
Ralph is overprepared today.
Sporting Kansas City is 10th place in the West this year. Did you know that?
I did not.
They apparently are having a monumental meltdown with international breaks, injuries. Captain Mac Beasler, actually wrote a letter to the fans addressing them about the players' commitment to the team, saying that a lot of the guys came in... they came in like 2 weeks earlier than the CBA allowed them to, and stuff like that. So it was, you know, it was very interesting. But they're 10th in the West coming in on Sunday. Shannon Box Day, as we're calling it, because we got Boxing Day in the in the UK.
Well, this is a double X,
but yeah, we've got Shannon Box Day, and I don't know what to expect on Sunday. I know Vermees has a great team, great youngsters, great established veterans too. But, what do you think?
I think that this team is still going to struggle because of the people that it doesn't have. I mean, it's not like Zardes is scoring at a fantastic clip that we missed that scoring. This team can't score, period. I could see this game being a 0-0 tie.
Yeah.
Because there is nothing, there's no offense.
Mm-hmm.
Or they decide to completely forgo defense, and it's like a 5-5 game.
And that's really how it is. It seems like every time that and that's how it is really. Anytime I feel like that Sporting Kansas City and Columbus get together, is that it's always a tight affair. It's either there's a ton of offense or there's a ton of defense. And Greg Berhalter scorpion kicks that we get on that we get on national TV, which is fun.
National TV.
Is this game on national TV?
Yes, because it was moved up so that the Cincinnati game, so it's a doubleheader.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. So get out there in full force, Columbus.
Yeah.
At Moffray Stadium, kickoff, I think, 5:30?
5:30 on a Sunday.
5:30 on a Sunday, which will be nice. We can
go to church if you go to church and everybody go home.
Everybody needs Jesus.
Go home and get changed and get ready and come out and pray that the crew win.
Yeah, get a Sunday barbecue, Sunday fun
goodness,
day.
Goodness, they need it.
Somebody let me know when the mimosas are ready in the parking lot, and I'll come out for those, because I need... Wait, we're not allowed to do that.
No. But I'm sure Murderers Row will be there from like 5 or 6 in the morning.
I hope they have like a mimosa party.
Since it's an early kickoff.
A brunch day. That would be great. But Sam, so you're going to say it's either going to be like 5-5 or like 0-0?
I don't see a 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 type of game.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't see where the scoring would come from, at least from the crew.
Yeah.
So it, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll believe it when this team is not showing me anything right now that inspires any confidence. And I don't mean that. I mean that.
You do mean that.
Obviously sounds bad, which is bad, but it's not like, it's like, you know what? Part of me says, let's just trash it and get ready for next year.
Open cup all the way.
I'd say go open cup all the way, trash the rest of it. You know what? We actually have a next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with that.
That's a discussion. We got to get out of here. I won't have that discussion. Maybe next podcast.
We could be here for a long time.
But, that was nice lightning there. Mother Nature is rearing her ugly head on this Monday evening. Well
hopefully not Tuesday evening.
Before the tornadoes come, inevitably at some point this evening, I think it's about time that we get out of here. As Bart Logan mentioned, yes?
Are you going to do score prediction?
Oh, am I going to do score prediction?
Because I said 1-0.
0-0.
0-0.
I'm going to go 0-0. I'm having too much fun. You shouldn't give me the mic.
You're right.
This is a terrible decision. It's because my enunciation is very, very good.
Right.
But anyway, for Bart Logan, for the departed Brian Phillips, who is somewhere on planet Earth.
He's not departed. He's tied up.
He's not here.
Yes.
For Alex Danik, who is out flipping burgers somewhere in the world. For Morgan Hughes, for Jonathan T-Bone Smith.
Mike Koski.
Pat Murphy, who's off still drunk, celebrating the St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup victory in St. Louis somewhere. Patrick Goldan, who is straightening his tie collection. Did I miss anybody else? Abigail Hintz, who's somewhere in the woods exploring somewhere.
Yeah.
Sam Fahmy, who's sitting next to me and made a terrible mistake of wasting a Monday by talking to me.
Pretty much.
On a microphone. For everybody.
It could have almost been a Sam and Ralph show, which nobody would want to hear.
Which is what's going on right now.
It is. Well, a Sam and Ralph segment is different than a Sam and Ralph show.
I think we need to start our... You know how we used to have the massive match day? We need to bring
but
that
you have,
back.
You have the Ralph Shudell show. I don't want to intrude on that.
Do you want to come on the Ralph Shudell show?
I do not want to come on the Ralph Shudell show.
Why?
I don't like being behind mics.
Would you say it's super hard?
No. Even though it is pretty dang cool.
Cute.
We need to kill it.
Need to kill it, even though I had a flower pot on my head yesterday during the Columbus Eagles game.
That's a reference only a few will get.
All right, now it's time to really get out of here, because I think I've added probably another unnecessary 2.5 minutes to your listening experience. Hopefully you have a great day at work, great day heading into the match. We'll see you out Tuesday night at Moffray Stadium. For Bart Logan, Sam Fahmy, my name's Ralph Shudell. You've been listening to episode 301 of the Massive Report Podcast. We'll catch you next time.